This is Circulating Ideas. I'm Steve Thomas. My guest today is Dr. Troy Swanson. He's the teaching and learning librarian and the library department chair at Moraine Valley Community College outside Chicago. He's also the author of the new book, Managing Social Media in Libraries. Troy, welcome to the show, and thanks for being on.
Thanks very much for having me. I appreciate it, and I'm a big fan of the podcast.
Thank you. You've written a new book called Managing Social Media in Libraries, and how it came to my attention was your post on Tame the Web. How did you get involved with Tame the Web and Michael Stevens?
It might even be murky for me to try to remember. I mean, I think basically we started blogging in 2004. Which was fairly early for most libraries. And Jenny Levine, who works in our regional library system, who now is at ALA, does the Shifted Librarian blog. She really helped us get started and helped support us. And she worked with Michael on a few things. And we were, I think, at an Internet Librarian presentation together. And then from there, we kept in touch. And as he was going through his dissertation, I was getting ready to do my dissertation, and we shared some ideas. And actually, he was a big inspiration in some of my the direction I took in my dissertation. And then after I had finished, I was looking to get some information out there. He asked me to do some guest posts, and it kind of just evolved from there. So, I'm a big fan of the writers on Tame the Web, and obviously, I think Michael is a big contributor to our profession. So, I owe a lot to him.
Who do you think is the main audience for your book?
Well, I tried to keep it broad, and I hope that I didn't do damage by keeping it too broad. I mean, I think there's a lot of pieces of the book that apply to all libraries. I work at a community college library, so obviously my experience on the job comes through, I think, in some parts. But I really went out of my way to try to also think about how public libraries work and spend a lot of time reading and looking at social media in public libraries and obviously talking to folks in social media and in person where I could. So I tried to reach out with a broad hand. I mean, I think no matter where you are, you're going to, with any book, have to adapt the ideas in that book to your unique circumstance. So I think I kind of wrote it with that assumption, too.
And the post that you had written about sort of the same idea was that you had said people had asked you like what kind of that they wanted a social media plan for their library, and your post was basically about that you don't need a social media plan.
Yeah, a lot of that I don't think you need a social media plan, and some of that statement kind of revolves around what do you mean by plan. I mean, it doesn't mean that you wouldn't have a direction. Some organizations, a formal plan might be warranted, but I think the thing with social media is that there's so much room for innovation, and the more that you plan to have a real strict plan, so by this point we're going to be doing, whatever, we're going to be writing about this, is you can really clamp down on innovation. And so I think it needs to be approached with the kind of playfulness that grows new ideas. But on the other hand, it can't be a total free-for-all. So there's a balance in there. And I know some people were critical of my statement that you don't need a plan, thinking that you don't need anything. And that's not really what I meant. So I think there's some structure that needs to be in place around social media. But I think it's a difficult thing to really plan out. Like, who knows where you're going to be in 2 or 3 years because it changes so quickly. So you need to be prepared to meet those changes as new technologies arise or new needs within your service population come up.
Right. It kind of ties into the idea that you talk about in this and also in another paper that I read that you had written about loose coupling. Can you talk about what that concept is?
Yeah, and that's a concept that's been around for a while, especially in higher ed research. It's from the organizational psychologist Carl Wieck. He's at Michigan. I'm a big fan of his work. And I know David Lankison, who was on the podcast a while back, in his Atlas of New Librarianship references some of his research, so it was good to see. Often the best way to describe what is a loosely coupled system is to think about what a tight system is. And a classic tight system would be the assembly line kind of model, where you have inputs that come in at the beginning, everyone in the assembly line has a job, and then you have an output at the end. And if someone along the way doesn't do their job, the tight system falls apart. where a loosely coupled system is a system that offers services where the inputs and outputs aren't as closely tied together. And a loose system, the nice thing about a loose system, the advantage, I think, of a loose system is that it's easily adaptable and that new ideas can start in one pocket of the system and then spread throughout the rest of the system. And I think, you know, a lot of libraries, especially around reference, are definitely the classic loosely coupled system where you have a service that you operate often 7 days a week. You have many people who are performing that service. You'd like some level of consistency between that service. But each individual person that you're serving who may come up to your reference desk, as an example, will have a very unique need. And so it's hard to make a tight system around that. The people in the system are necessarily going to have to adapt that service to meet the unique need that stands before them. So the challenge with a loose system is that as we're constantly making this new knowledge, but it's very difficult to then share that knowledge across the system. So like in my library, I have, you know, there's 22 librarians that work our reference desk 7 days a week, and we're open from 7 in the morning till 10 at night. And there's never one point in time that all of us can come together and share our knowledge that we're creating all the time. So we try to use social media in our library as a way, even if no one else in the world looks at our blogs and our Facebook page, we at least use it as a way to share internally for us to teach ourselves when we can't be together. And we have other mechanisms to do that as well. But the challenge of a loosely coupled system is how do we coordinate together to make decisions and to offer services that make sense? And then when that new innovation is hit upon by one member of our system, how does that person communicate the innovation out to everybody else and put it into practice? And I think that's the challenge and growth that we have in libraries.
Right. You talk in the book about that you have some people who maybe are weekend people and they don't ever meet the people who work at night. And so you have people who are on your staff that never meet each other.
Yes. And I'm the department chair for our professional staff. And so, you know, I'm in touch with everybody all the time, but every so often it'll come up and one of our librarians will say, "Oh, I've never met you before." Like two librarians will meet and it'll hit me. Oh yeah. Right. You know, she works at this time of night and she works during the day. And, you know, they never come together except for maybe a random meeting now and again.
Yeah, and most people don't usually talk about, that's what I found interesting about your book, is that most people don't talk about the internal uses of social media. Almost everybody's talking about pushing it out to our communities and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the work getting it out to our, you know, the people we serve is obviously number one. But I kind of think they go hand in hand together. And, you know, we have, let's see, 6 or 7 MLS level folks who do cataloging for us. And they might be here the same time as a lot of our public service people, but they don't work together closely. But all of our materials, our physical materials for sure, are coming through the hands of these catalogers. And I've really encouraged them to write about them on our blogs, partly to inform our public service folks about new materials that might be of interest. But obviously that blog post goes out to all of our community, and that's a huge benefit to get this knowledge that's kind of locked away in those back rooms of your library out to the people that might find it useful. So I think there's this dual purpose that social media can have. And even if we're not getting huge amounts of people following us on Facebook, which may or may not happen, at least focusing internally at first is a great way to grow content, encourage usage by all of your staff. And I probably have almost all of our librarians are writing on our blogs. It's 20 plus folks. And I talk to different librarians at conferences and they say, you know, there's like two of us. How do I get that? How do I grow that number? And there's challenges in that, but giving them that internal focus may be a way to take some of those first steps.
You have a whole section of the book about motivating employees to use social media, because sometimes when you roll out some new service, people are a little reluctant to get out there and put themselves out there and aren't sure how to get involved.
Yes. You know, when for my research, I did research on blogs for my PhD, and I did interviews of bloggers. And I expected to find, and maybe this reveals some of my bias, but I expected to find you know, the heavy-handedness of administrators. Like, you can't post this, like all these strict rules. And on some places that I went, I actually found the opposite, where there were no rules. And the administrators that I interviewed were like, we trust, up on reference, old Bob works up there. He's great. We trust him. He can just post. And then I would talk to the bloggers, and they would reveal this fear that because there's lack of definition from their supervisors, they're actually scared to put their neck out on the line. Like, I don't know how my bosses see this tool being used in our organization. So I was a little surprised, and that's why I really think this balance idea is important. We can't have – I was afraid that the fear of anarchy would mean there would be all these rules that stamp down innovation within organizations. But I found the opposite in many cases, where the lack of rules caused fear from the frontline staff, that they were scared to use it because they didn't get how it could actually be used or how the bosses, quote-unquote bosses, see the value in these tools. So I think there's a need for both sides. We need some rules. We need some guidelines. And this is how we see this moving forward, but not to go too far where you stamp out other possible innovations that may come along.
Yeah, you talk about setting up social media guidelines and some best practices and things like that, just to sort of get as a sort of a guidepost.
Yeah, as a way to just get that conversation going. I've written in a few different places about this idea of there's a conundrum of control that organizations face, where if you have too much control, then there's no adaptability. And if it's too little control, then you do risk some bad decisions. Like, you could have people, you don't want people out there, talking about their religious, political, insulting kinds of views. There's a risk there. So you want to, get some reasonable approaches to it. But also, the lack of definition can cause a stagnation, a fear of use around some of these tools. So you've got to find a way, if you're a manager of a department or a director of a library, to offer some balance between too loose and too tight.
Right, because you said you don't want people going crazy, but then you also don't want people feeling stagnant.
Yeah, right.
But right. One comparison in your book that I really liked is that you compared social media to the microwave, that it was something that we didn't know that we wanted it before we knew about it, but once we had it, it's not ever going to go away because it's too important to us now.
Right. Well, and there's this risk. It's kind of I think along some of that discussion was the Blockbuster video rental issue. Right. No one knew that they wanted Netflix, and Blockbuster did such a great job. They were being a great Blockbuster. And if you would have interviewed their customers, they never would have said, "Hey, send me DVDs in the mail." But someone figured it out, and then all of a sudden, that innovation, pulled it out from under them. So, I mean, I think there's some risk in that, and we need to be kind of figuring out if our users are just wanting fiction. Well, there may be a whole other community out there that we're missing. So we could serve those users really, amazingly well, and then we're missing this other group. And there's a lot of conversation in library circles along those lines, that's for sure, and useful ideas on how to bridge that. But I think thinking organizationally, we need to always be encouraging innovation because it's our people in our staff that can see those opportunities. So we need structures that encourage that to happen, or sometimes lack of structures, thinking about that balance.
And that sort of ties into what you talk about later in the book, is about the idea that books are the brand of libraries, but as the world is sort of changing somewhat away from that, even if it's from physical books to ebooks, things like that. And you talk about how social media is a way that we can help sort of transition to new things.
Yeah, that's right. I think we have there's good and bad. I mean, I love that libraries are branded with books, because I think books are still important. And I'm obviously a big fan of books, but I don't read that many physical books anymore. And so I think, we obviously know the challenges of getting beyond that brand. I go to some library sites and I see, here's our book blog. Well, just by calling it the book blog, you're tying it. I think libraries need to be about ideas, and that this should be our ideas blog. And if that idea comes out of a book, great. And if it comes from a YouTube video that's free on the web, great. And if it comes from, wherever, we should be focused on the ideas that are important in our community. And the idea of new librarianship, I think that Lankus is really pushing out there. I'm a absolute believer, and I think that idea moves us forward. One idea I mentioned in my book, which references the Atlas, is this idea of what is your library's curriculum? And in our library, that's a natural kind of thing because we work in a college setting. I don't know if that's always so common in other library settings. And so that, to me, brings you back to that focus on ideas and not things or even websites, right? I mean, it's the idea of what are the ideas that are important to the people we serve, and how do I best foster the growth of new ideas in my community? And I think social media isn't the only answer to that, but it definitely plays a role.
It's also important, I think, that, and you talk about this a little bit, that management really needs to be involved and invested in any kind of social media that we do.
Yes. There's no question. And I think as time is going on, the lack of connection or lack of recognition from our directors is not as prevalent as it was. I think if you went back 5 or 6 years ago, there'd be a few lone bloggers in the library, and then everyone else would be like, what is this again? Why are we doing this? And I think people are seeing the impact more and more, but it's hard if you're it's hard to jump silos within the organization, and that's the role of administration. So, you know, at the department head level or beyond, those are people that need to look within their department and say, you know, this librarian is doing great work, and someone else in the neighboring department could value that work, and to connect those people together. So even if, you know, we may not want our directors becoming our lead bloggers, we know that directors are busy enough, but they should also be the people that see an idea in one area and connect that idea to another area within our organization. So in smaller libraries, smaller organizations, you know, this idea sharing is, it can be easier, but the larger the organization, the more spread out and distributed it is, it can be challenging to just share for one hand and know what the other hand is doing. You know, there was the conversation not too long ago about Yahoo ending the work from home policy.
Right.
And I think there's a lot of interesting aspects to that, and I think there's some questionable impact it's going to have, especially on women, and that's where a lot of the conversation is had. But I heard one commentator say part of that decision was that the accidental meeting of somebody in the lunchroom line that actually fosters innovation, you don't do that when you're both at home, right? And maybe there's ways you could do it online, but mm-hmm. The accidental bumping into somebody in the hallway, hey, how you doing? What are you working on? That's where innovation comes from. The innovation is messy, and innovation happens with sloppiness and play. And so, you know, efficiencies in organizations is a great way to destroy innovation sometimes. So I think there's also that, like the administrative structure needs to foster innovation, but we also need to make incidental contacts happen all around us. So.
And that kind of ties into the idea of that you write about of David Weinberger's kind of ideas of like more flattening the organization out of spreading the information, not making it so sort of top heavy.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a big fan of Weinberger's work. His book Everything Miscellaneous is I think every librarian, even though it's a few years old by now,
yes,
you should absolutely have that on your shelf or on your iPad or Kindle. And I mentioned him a couple times in the book that, you know, you can tell my reading list by the people I reference as I write. But yeah, the flattening the structure is really important, and making those incidental contacts come up. You know, in groups, I think there's two main challenges that groups face. And there's cooperation problems and there's coordination problems. And so, you know, cooperation problems focus around the willingness of people to do things. So sometimes that's more, you know, interpersonal kinds of problems. But coordination problems come from, you know, the challenge of the ability of people to align their actions with the actions of other people. And I think when we are using social media across an organization, it does help the coordination game. So when the example I used earlier of the catalogers writing up a blog post about a book, and then, you know, a public service librarian seeing that and knowing that it's on the shelf, then that helps solve some kind of coordination problem within my library, because the knowledge from one unit is moving to another unit. Cooperation problem is a whole different kind of challenge, but I think there's a role for social media in making coordination happen within the group. And that goes back to that internal use of the tools.
And I think probably the most important thing, the kind of the core thing, is that if you're using social media in libraries, which I think is at this point almost required,
right?
that you don't kind of go in in a messy way, that you define your purpose and you find some focus before you step into it.
Yeah, and I think there's a balancing act. I mean, there's room for playing around, and there's room for doing like the kind of soft release, where, you know, if your library's not using Pinterest, maybe a few people are just kind of messing around with it. You don't make a big deal out of it, and you see what works, and then you figure out a focus in that way. And sometimes it's seeing a clear focus and diving in and using it just for that focus. You know, the last couple of years really put a big effort into. We do a lot of public events in our library, a lot of lectures and panel discussions with our faculty and sometimes outside guests to kind of enrich the curriculum. And we have decided, we haven't done a whole lot with YouTube in our library, but we did a big push to try to capture lectures via YouTube, because we have so many students who have jobs and are commuter students. And so we wanted to capture that physical event that happened and then distribute it online. So our YouTube usage has been very focused on this one kind of goal, and we knew the goal before we really were diving into it. Where as we started blogging, you know, the use of our blogs, even though they're just blog posts, but we've evolved to, from, you know, we do reviews, we write up something that happened at the reference desk. There's a lot of different kinds of uses we write about for our blogs, where the YouTube has had that focus from the beginning. So, I mean, I think the thing that libraries should remember is that you don't want to overplan. You know, one of Michael Stevens' mantras, you know, don't overplan and stop the innovation from happening before it starts.
You've talked a little bit about Michael Stevens and David Lankus and Dave Weinberger. Is there anybody else in particular that sort of is an inspiration for you in a professional way?
Well, those are definitely some of my big ones. There's a ton of others. I'm a big fan of Jason Griffey. Some of the folks you've had on here, Jan Holmquist is doing really great work. Buffy Hamilton's out there. There's great people in information literacy. They wear a few different hats. Lisa Hinchcliffe at Illinois in the ACRL and in information literacy kind of spheres. She's a big leader and someone I'm in touch with. So, the great thing with community college libraries is that you're forced to, you know, I play a technology role, I play an instructional role, public service role. So there's a lot of hats that I wear, which is part of the fun of my job. I think community college libraries are not heralded enough in the libraries, especially not in academic libraries, but libraries in general. And we do a lot of outreach with the local library schools to bring students in to kind of show off what we do. To me, you know, we are academic focused. We are the gateway to scholarship for a lot of students who are first generation college students. We have a role that's similar in some ways to a public library. Like, we know our service area very well. We have a defined district that we serve, and we know our public librarians very well. So there's this kind of public library feel in some way, but we definitely are focused on our curriculum, and we are, to me, we are the voice for scholarship in some ways on our campus. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way toward community colleges, but, you know, we on community colleges, for faculty members, you're not required to publish. So, you know, our faculty really focus on teaching. They're great teachers, and they do good work, and they're in touch with their disciplines for sure. But we're often the ones that are lifting up what is the role of the scholar, what is the role of peer reviewed. Like, we do a lot of those kind of conversations on our campus, and it's great. You know, and some days I'm doing social media work and I'm uploading videos to YouTube. Other days I'm out organizing events. There's committee work, and then there's some weeks where I'm just in the classroom all week doing instruction, and that's the thing that I love is. There's just so much variety, and as soon as you're getting burnt out in one area, something new is about to come your way. So it's a place that I think you can really transform yourself and make innovation happen easily. And I'm a big fan. I work at Moraine Valley Community College. Just to give them a shout out, it's a great organization, and I'm really fortunate to have been here for as long as I have.
Yeah, I think if I ever, I had worked in academic libraries earlier in my career, and the one that I liked, I think, the most was at a local community college, just because, and that helped my transition, I think, into, I'm in public libraries now, because that was more about what, just the kind of stuff you're talking about, where it's more, I don't know, I don't want to say everyday people, but more who knows what's going to happen today.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
There's other challenges, obviously, to academic libraries, but that's what I kind of love, is that I have no idea what's going to happen today.
Well, and, the whole academic, the scholarly enterprise, we need our senior research institutions. Like, we need the people writing the great theoretical works, and I absolutely appreciate that. And there's huge value in the breakthroughs that research institutions do. So I'm glad that they exist, and I don't want to work for them. I remember one day, this day always sticks in my mind. One day I was literally sitting down with a student who was in one of our pre-college level classes, helping him write, what is an introductory sentence to a paragraph, and helping him then write supporting sentences. And then I turned around on the reference desk, and I was helping someone in a business class pull up, SEC filings for this big paper they were writing. And the variety is huge. This fall, I had a student come in with this look of fear in his eyes. I wrote about this on Tame the Web. And I was like, I wonder what kind of question I'm going to get out of this. And he had a tie in his hand, and he said, I have a job interview. I've never learned how to tie a tie. Can you help me? And I was wearing a tie. So I'm like, yeah, sure, come on. So I untied my tie, and we stood at the reference desk, and I showed him how to tie a knot in a tie so that he could go on this job interview. And one of the other librarians was standing there, and she was like, that was the coolest thing I think I've seen in our library in a long time. So it still kind of brings a smile to my face. So it's a great environment to be. And I think the application of technology, I think our library drives innovation in a lot of different ways on our campus. We're a place that fills in gaps. We're a place that connects faculty members to each other. So I'm a big believer, not just in our library, but in community colleges in general.
Yeah, every once in a while I do a search on the web just for about the podcast to see who's talking about it, whatever. And one of the things that came up was, I was so excited, was the community college in the town where I grew up has it listed as like a resource for librarians.
Yeah. And
I didn't go to that school, but it was just exciting for that, where I grew up.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I don't mean to go too far away from libraries, but that when I started here, a lot of our founding faculty members were still working. And for them, who started this college in the 60s, there was a real movement behind community colleges of bringing higher ed to everyday people. And it's sad that to some degree that movement feeling has gone away, but also a recognition that, everyone in general, I don't know if I'd say everyone nationwide, but in general, most people have their community college. Like it's your public library. There's just an assumption that you have a community college. And I think that's a huge step for the concept of what a community college is. Now, how well they fund them and all the other challenges that we face may be a different kind of discussion, but that people feel ownership of their community college. I think that's a powerful idea and a powerful way that higher education is connected to communities. And that's the thing that I love about it. And I found my philosophy about being a librarian and the values that we discussed when I was in library school was a perfect fit for the idea of open access education in community colleges.
So you're going to be on the task force for updating the information literacy competency standards for higher education, for ACRL?
Yes.
I know you haven't really gotten started with that, so you can't really talk about that specifically, but is there anything that sort of in your mind as you're going to go into this that you think specifically needs to be updated in the competency standards?
Well, and the committee's just getting started, and we're really at the email distribution list level of introducing ourselves.
Right. They're early days.
And there's some good papers that are out there on the ACRL website, some white papers that have been put out. The work that was done in 99 with these most recent standards, I think first off, I just want to say, has been invaluable to our library. I mean, I think the idea of having a document that focuses our profession's understanding of information literacy is really important. And it gives us, even though there's always going to be, no matter what you write, there's going to be problems with it, and it's not going to work in all settings, so there's going to be need for debate and looking at what's wrong with it. But that discussion itself, I think, is valuable. I think we've come a long way in what the just web world we live in means from where we were in the late 90s. And I think the discussion of where does digital literacy fit in this? What are the ideas of transliteracy? What are the other kinds of literacies that that come from this, how does information literacy touch on those, I think is central. For me, my big thing is I would love a set of standards that are more guideline-based that can be used to connect to disciplines so that when I walk into the psychology department, I have a set of standards that can easily be molded to meet their needs and have a basis of conversation. I also think I'd like to see some discussion that touches a little bit more on how students think of themselves as content creators. So less skills things, you know, do step A to get to step B. But what does it mean as a iterative learning environment that that students see themselves in, and that kind of 21st century learner approach, I think is important. Beyond that, I'm really honored to have been asked to be on the committee. I'm still trying to absorb a lot of this, and Trudy Jacobson and Craig Gibson, who's the co-chairs, are just, they're light years ahead doing great work. And so I'm hoping to be a good voice for community colleges and to offer hopefully some useful input as we go forward. I think at annual this summer will be the first kind of meetings to get things moving forward. It's interesting to me, that I've written this book about social media and that my research has been in social media, but some of the first stuff that I was writing as a professional was focused on information literacy. And, we live and breathe information literacy in my library. And so I think it's absolutely vital. That's how we should think about ourselves. Each year, our library, along with a couple other libraries in Illinois, we host the Information Literacy Summit for Illinois, and we bring together librarians from all walks of librarianship, from higher ed, K-12, and many public libraries. And I've been very interested to see the interest that public librarians have had in thinking about what is information literacy in their roles on the job and as educators in their communities. And I think that these standards obviously have a higher ed focus, but there's no doubt that they reach out in much broader ways than just teaching library, kind of information literacy research sessions for writing classes. In the information overload world that we're in, information literacy is just vital. So,
do you find ACRL to be useful to you and as a professional and ALA and other professional organizations?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that ALA, and I should admit my biases. I went to library school at Dominican, which is outside of Chicago, and I had the fortunate experience of doing a practicum at ALA's library with Mary Jo Lynch, who's since retired. So I've worked in the organization. I know the people. Some of the people are still there who were there when I worked there. I've always been a big believer in ALA and ACRL. There's a certain amount of inefficiency just with the size and the scope of trying to serve the range of different things that libraries do. And I think that as a profession, or as professionals, sometimes we're a little critical of the work. But, seeing the staff and how hard they work and the amount of people they serve and things that they do with the numbers of people they have, I'm always in awe of what they do. More and more as a profession, we need a voice in terms of lobbying, in terms of giving us focus, and especially some of the ebook discussions. There's ways we can be critical of some of the things that and we should be. We should raise our voices, but ALA is trying to step forward and to represent us, and I think that's so important. There's times you go and you write your membership check, and it kind of off a little bit when you have to pay your dues. But I still believe it's money well spent. And I will admit that at different times in my professional career, I had skipped my membership. So I there's times where you have to make some rough choices. But when finances get better, then, I've done that. And I've tried to keep my dues up as much as I all the times. Because I think it does matter. It really does.
Yeah, and it's almost the time when you resubscribe is sort of the time you sit back and think about why am I a part of this, and that helps motivate me to write the check every year. Making sure I feel like it is worth it to me, and if it is worth it to me, I will resubscribe, and I have for 10 plus years now.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, going to conference and getting that one idea or making that connection, you know, I think a great thing that I have that I love about just being in libraries and in higher ed is that, you know, we're not competitors with each other, but we're all partners in this kind of larger endeavor. And all the time we'll call our local, you know, our peer community colleges, especially in the Chicagoland area. Like, I know most of the librarians that are in community college libraries within our region. And just to be able to call and say, hey, what are you guys doing with this? It's super great. Or, hey, could our, you know, can our systems librarian, you know, drop by your library just to kind of touch base on what's happening? It's a real value that we have these connections and can share ideas because, you know, we're all kind of fighting the same fight in the grand scheme of things.
Right. You talked a little bit about in a different post on Tame the Web, sort of about how your reading has changed.
One thing that's interesting for us is that we've been really watching the kind of ebook debates happening, but in our library, we don't provide OverDrive. We have some ebook collections through EBSCO, but the kind of things that we do in the community college library, we've been fortunate enough to be able to drag our feet a little bit on diving in, especially with fiction for ebooks. And so my main experience with library ebooks has been using my local public library, which I love the work that they do. I checked out this book, and I, you know, with kids at home, most of my kind of reading time on my iPad comes at lunch, sometimes at night, but not as often as I'd like. And my other number one reading time is in my car driving to work on audiobooks. I do tons of audiobooks.
Yeah.
But yeah, I barely got through chapter one. It was Thomas Mann's 1493, and it vanished. You know, it kind of hit me with a 3-week checkout period, and I think I could have gone on and renewed it. I'm never going to be able to finish this book, and you know, at least with the physical book, if I was willing to pay up the fines, I could at least hang on to it. but this kind of experience of the vanishing book was new, you know, kind of this outer world. This big hand reaches in and just takes it away from me. So, yeah, it's just these fascinating times that we live in, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm disappointed sometimes if I open up my Kindle and it's on the page that I was at before, but I try to go to the next page and then it tells me loan ended or whatever.
Right. Well, and, you know, I should say, for, you know, the publisher should realize. So I checked this book out from my library, and I, you know, I got through the chapter. I loved it, and I'm like, I want to read this book. So I actually went to, I think I went to iTunes and bought it on audio, or maybe I use Audible. I use a lot of different things for audiobooks, but I ended up buying it. And it was well worth the money for me to pay for it, download it to my iPod, and then listen to it, you know, in my car on my drive to work, and then I could take my time going through it. So the library did offer value to me that I could at least, you know, see the book, read through it, skim over it, get into it, and then when it disappeared, I went out and bought it. And if I didn't like the book, I probably wouldn't have purchased it or stressed about it or written about it on Tame the Web.
Right. I mean, all the studies always show that correlation is there between libraries and book sales going. People who use libraries buy more books, but publishers still seem afraid of libraries. So.
Yeah, right. Well, and I think interlibrary loan does that too. You know, with my book, I donated a copy to my library to be put on the shelves, and because of course I'm sure all my staff are going to read every single page. No, but, you know, so our interlibrary loan person said, "Hey, I think Michael Stevens did a little kind of review on Tame the Web," and all of a sudden we had, you know, 80 interlibrary loan requests. And she's like, "Do you really want me to interlibrary loan your book?" I'm like, "Yeah, go do it. Do it. Send it out and let people use it." And because I really do believe that, you know, as people look at it, getting the word out there about it, those are the kind of things that drive sales. Me hoarding it and putting it here. You know, I didn't write the book just for the money, obviously, because it's not like anyone who writes in this kind of stuff knows all this money hidden in there. But, you know, like, yeah, get it out there and let people get it in their hands and let people talk about the ideas. And I think that's the most important thing. And that's going to drive more people to want the book than just hiding it away and protecting it, you know. So, and I don't think publishers are quite there yet.
Well, you wrote a book about social media. How can people find out more about you on social media?
Yeah, the easiest way to probably get me is on Twitter. I'm pretty active on Twitter. That's T_Swanson. You can find me on Facebook if you want to search. Tame the Web is probably my number one kind of online hangout place. I don't have my own personal blog. It's interesting that I don't have as much personal exposure out there. I use Tame the Web as my outlet, and then Twitter is my other main way.
All right. Well, Troy, thank you so much for talking to me. I found it really important. I've had people on the show before talking about social media, but your book really had a lot of stuff in it that was different, especially all the internal kind of social media stuff. So I hope some people learn some new things about social media today.
Dude, thanks for having me. I enjoy the podcast, and you're doing great work, and I think this is a really valuable forum for discussion for our profession. So I hope you keep it up, and I know it's a challenge with job and everything else. So thank you for doing this.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
If you'd like to learn more about the podcast, you can visit circulatingideas.com, or you can follow the show on Twitter at CircIdeas, or on Tumblr at circulatingideas.tumblr.com. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/circulatingideas. And if you have comments, questions, or suggestions for future interviews, you can contact the show at circulatingideas.mail@gmail.com. Music is by Pamela Klicka. Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join me again next time.